keep this promise to the American people. If you like your doctor, you will be able to keep your doctor, period. If you like your health care plan, you will be able to keep your health care plan, period.
The lie detector determined that was a lie.
Now let's make two things clear. ISIL is not Islamic. No religion condones the killing of innocents.
Love
the vast majority of ISIL's victims have been Muslim. And ISIL is certainly not a state.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone is now dumber for having listened to it.
Wow. Stunning. And that really is the nature of the world today. The vast preponderance of those who have achieved positions of power and influence are liars, are saying things that are the antithesis of what's true, are counterproductive. We really have descended into an abyss as what may once have been considered a civilization. And there is no remedy for this. Obama's predecessor was almost as bad as he is. He started two wars based on lies. This man has started a third and a fourth. Libya, look what he did there. Oh, my God, look at Libya today. I mean, Libya is nothing now but a terror hellhole. There's no government. Total and complete anarchy as vine Islamic terrorist groups compete for power. All while wielding and selling weapons that are being deployed around the world, and particularly in Africa, to kidnap, rape, and torment little girls. Look what he's done. Look at Iraq. Look at Syria. God, look at America. And yet, people will wave the flag. They will go to the polls and vote. They will identify themselves with a political party. They'll still have bumper stickers that have the Abominator on it. Yeah, we've lost our minds.
And nobody calls him on it. That's the other thing. Rarely does he ever get called on it.
No. There isn't a single politician, at least that I'm aware of, on either side of the aisle, or anyone in the military, after Obama said that the Islamic State is not Islamic, after he said that Islam is a religion of peace, there isn't anybody in the Pentagon, there is no one in the intelligence community, there was no one on Capitol Hill, there was no one in the mainstream media that said, are you out of your ever-loving mind? I mean, that's all the Islamic State is Islamic. Islam is a declaration of war on all humankind. Read the Quran. Look at their history. Good grief. This is not difficult. You know, we've been engaged in this, for 13 years now. Longer if you want to go back to the first war the United States of America actually fought, which was against Muslims. So we've been at this for over 200 years if you want to go back to the fact that the first war America fought was against Islam. But even if you just want to look at this war on terrorism, as if terrorism were an entity as opposed to a tactic, Muslims screaming Allahu Akbar, most from Saudi Arabia, indoctrinated in the Al-Qaeda mosque in Hamburg, Germany, leaving videos behind saying that they were doing it in the name of Allah, citing the Quran as their motivation, celebrated the world over by Muslims, screaming Allahu Akbar into the flight recorders, giving their religion and their God complete credit for their act. And yet, 13 years after 9/11, we're still promoting the lie that Islam means peace, that Islamic terrorists are not Islamic, and the man gets away with it. When that occurs, the problem isn't the liar. It's not the abominator. It's the rest of us. Not given a hoot. Willing to be lied to. A nation without accountability. A nation that has been dumbed down through political correctness and an indoctrination versus an education that can't exercise good judgment. It's our fault. The majority of Americans who voted elected this idiot not once but twice. We have no one to blame but ourselves. And before that, George W. Bush, who was almost as bad. We have no one to blame but ourselves. Staying in that part of the world, in this article, it said the speaking of the site being the third holiest in Jerusalem, it should be, if the world was even remotely informed, it should be a total embarrassment to Jews. That site, Jerusalem. Jerusalem and the Temple Mount in Jerusalem and all of Israel is the inverse of Islam. It's the antithesis. It is the white to Islam's black. It is the truth to Islam's lie. And even more amazing that the only reference to this the place, not even named in the Quran, but it's assumed to be Jerusalem, was Muhammad's wild-ass donkey ride. One ass on top of another. You know, and with his child, wife, the six-year-old Aisha, saying, "Now, man," he never left his bed that night. But nonetheless, he told Muslims, and Muslims believe it, in his Quran, you know, the holy word of Allah, that he jumped on a wild ass, a winged ass, and flew from Mecca to Jerusalem to have a big powwow in the temple. Except he was so stupid, he didn't know that the temple had been destroyed by the Romans over 600 years before he made the idiot claim. Oh, and there, must have reincarnation in Islam, because he had a meeting with all of the Jewish bigwigs, everyone whose position was the antithesis of his own. And then from there, he took his wild ass, and they jumped to the various heavens, according to the Hadith. And guess what? The first thing they passed through on the way to the heavens. Yeah, they leaped up through hell. That's where Muhammad said that he met most of the inhabitants in hell. Most of them were women. They were hanging by their breasts. When he was asked why they were doing so, he said, because they're ungrateful to their husbands. And he said, you know, what's wrong with women? And he said, well, you've read heard the Quran. No one read the Quran. It wasn't written at this point. You've heard the Quran. A worth of a woman is half of that of a man. And from there, he tells this tale of going to the various seven heavens. And it's absolutely, wholly, and completely laughable. This whole ass ride from Mecca to Jerusalem into the non-existent temple to meet with reincarnated Jews and then to jump up through hell to heaven ought to be one of the thousands of black stones that destroy the credibility of Muhammad and Islam. And they would, to anybody who was informed and rational. The Israeli Tourism Ministry's decision earlier this week to expand the entrance to the site was condemned by Muslim officials, Palestinians, as a unilateral change in the status of the sensitive holy site. They attacked Israel 1948, 1967, 1974 with the purpose of destroying Israel and killing every Jew. They lost all three wars. Who loses a war and maintains the territory that is conquered by the victor? And when they were given access to the site, they were given access under the proviso that it be a site that the rest of the world could visit. The first thing they did is shut off the rest of the world because Muslims are intolerant. I've been to Israel. Guess where you can't go? The Temple Mount. Guess where I most wanted to go when I was in Israel? The Temple Mount. Guess where I was prevented from going? The Temple Mount. By whom? By Muslims. So when Jews, whose capital is Jerusalem, whose country for thousands of years longer than Islam has existed has been Israel, say, you know, we think that anybody coming to Israel ought to have a right to see the most important place on earth. And Muslims say no. The way that Muslims handle their rejection is to throw a tizzy fit. This is a blight. Deadly disease. Baghdad, Dateline. I mentioned this yesterday, but it bears mentioning again. This reads, insurgents shot down. No. The Islamic State shot down an Iraqi military helicopter on Wednesday near a refinery. This is the second aircraft, military aircraft, that the Islamic State has shot down in the last 2 days. Now, I ask you, since America is flying helicopters over this same site, aren't we vulnerable? The reason this is an important aspect of this developing mess in Syria is the mentality of America, particularly its military. This is the mess we got into at Vietnam. When rational people said, after we had lost a few hundred men for nothing in Vietnam, that we need to leave, the reason that we didn't leave, it was always told to us, well, that would mean that those who have died, died in vain. How would you like to go to the parents of someone who had lost a child fighting this war and tell them that they fought for vain, that we didn't accomplish anything, that we just simply gave up? Well, when we had lost 5,000 people, that was the same argument. And after 10,000 Americans were dead, that was the same argument. You can't allow those 10,000 to have died in vain. So we lost 15,000 and 20,000. And when the argument was raised, we're not accomplishing anything. This whole effort is counterproductive. We were lied to about the reasons that we engaged in this war, and there is nothing to be gained by it. We were told that you can't allow those who fought here and died to have died in vain. And if you leave now, they will have died in vain, so we cannot leave. And then it was 30,000 and 40,000 and 50,000. The same thing was true in Iraq. When it was obvious the moment that we invaded Iraq that there was no Saddam Hussein army that was willing to engage Americans, there was no government that we were going to overthrow, that there was no wonderful, loving reception of liberators, that it was the very civilians that we went into that country to supposedly bring freedom to that were killing us. That it was a slow and painful death. And when it was obvious that there was only losing, rather than leave in recognition that there was no chance of success, we stayed because the old line was replayed. But that would mean that those who have died here died in vain. We can't allow that to happen. We must stay. Even now, when senators like John McClown speak of us leaving Iraq, he said, by leaving Iraq, it means that all of those who fought and died there died in vain. That is inappropriate, cowardice, immoral. No. No, because, McClown, if you had your way, it'd be Vietnam. They would continue to die, and once more had died, and the situation became worse, more would die to make the myth that others had fought there for something worthwhile continue to be touted. And so more would die. And then the justification for more dying would all be the same. Well, I'm going to tell you that because the Islamic State has surface-to-air missiles, because they can shoot helicopters and aircraft out of the sky, it's only time before they shoot an American aircraft down and either kill or capture its pilots. And then what are we going to say? We're using attack helicopters right now over Fallujah in the Anbar province. We're using them now on the outskirts, on the border town with Turkey. What's going to happen when it's an American helicopter piloted by Americans? We don't want them to die in vain, so we sacrifice ever more. We get in deeper. That's our mentality. It's too bad we can't stop it before we get there. And oh, by the way, we're failing. This tiny little force of 20 to 30,000 fundamentalist Sunni Islamic jihadists is growing ever stronger. And the moment that America declared war on them was the great catalyst that made them ever more popular, swelling their ranks. On yesterday's reading, they surrounded the outskirts of this Kurdish town along the Turkish border. By early this morning, they had a third of the town under their control. A few hours later, they control most of the town. All the while, America is dropping its bombs. If it's making a difference, it's aiding and abetting the terrorists. These are horrible decisions that we're making. And the consequence of these decisions are going to lead to more and more deaths and an attitude that cost so many lives in Vietnam, that cost so many lives in Iraq, needlessly squandered on this myth that we can't allow those who fought and died to have died in vain. And so we sacrifice ever more lives. That is the current inevitability of what is occurring in Syria. It need not be the case. But with liars in the Pentagon and liars in the White House and liars on Capitol Hill, it is what we're going to endure. A week ago, I was having a conversation with Glenn about the unique nature of Ebola this time around and how this particular strain of Ebola is not acting like previous strains. For example, you very seldom see pictures now of somebody that is hemorrhaging out of their eyes, nose, mouth, ears from Ebola, which was in previous outbreaks. Ebola was the most common telltale sign of this disease. And the other aspect was that Ebola in previous outbreaks had a kill rate that was in the 90 to 95% range. The kill rate for this strain of Ebola started out at that kill rate, then dropped to about 80%, then dropped to about 70%, and some report now that it could be as low as 50% kill rate. The same thing is true on the incubation period, and important to recognize, and Glenn called in with and I'm reading in the stack that he wanted to talk about the incubation period. I read over the past 6 months, I read over 100 articles from the New York Times, Washington Post, Reuters, the BBC. The nation's leading newspapers, CNN, and media outlets on Ebola. And of those 100 reports, I would give you just an estimate of about 90% of them, 90 of them, had at the end of the article the same statistics on Ebola. It would have began typically with how it's contracted and then, you know, bodily fluids. Then it would have the incubation period. Incubation period was always put at 21 days. Always. Every single article, and I've read hundreds of them, always had the same bullet points, 21 days. May have been true. No longer true. So when I saw the headline during one of the breaks, I looked and they went up to the World Health Organization site to see, you know, have they changed their information regarding the incubation period of Ebola? And in fact, they say now that, well, it perhaps can go from contracting the disease to symptoms of the disease in as few as 2 days or as long as 21 days. And that the average time from contact of this particular strain of Ebola to showing the first symptoms of Ebola are 8 to 10 days. Now, in the case of our Texas idiot, he and the son, as well as the pregnant daughter, all lived communally. The fellow that came to America was a tenant in their home. The son died within 24 hours or 48 hours. I don't know if it's 24 or 48 hours, but within 48 hours of the incident that that the man who came to America lied about, that where he had been in contact with his landlord's daughter. You don't go from contracting the disease to being dead within 48 hours with Ebola. And so, since they were all together, it is still likely that the man who contracted the disease did so, along with the son, previous to this affair. But no matter the timing, he knew that he had been in contact with someone with Ebola because the woman that he had taken in the cab and then brought back home died that night of Ebola. And the man that he was working with, the son, who was the brother of the woman who died, living in the house, same house as a tenant, died within 48 hours. And he lied about all of that. Now, that being the case, I'm happy to have Glenn clarify or add to anything that I said, but it's always important to correct and to correct the record when something has changed and you learn something new.
Yeah.
Hello, Glenn.
Hello, yeah. You pretty much hit the point that I was making, which was, you know, that the time, it's up to 21 days until the manifestation of symptoms, you know, from the time of contracting the disease to the manifestation of symptoms is up to 21 days.
Yeah, right.
And actually, according to Henry L. Nyman, who's an epidemiologist, makes the rounds of the talk radio circuit, mm-hmm. he was saying originally, early on, they had a couple cases that had even gone to 25 days.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, 21 was seeming to be the maximum for the most part.
Yeah, but by the way, it was never right before we had this outbreak, which you and I have talked about many times, is quite different than anything the world has ever experienced. It's different in many, many ways. The fatality mortality rate is hugely different, from 95% down to as little as 50%. The manner of death is quite different. The incubation period appears at least to be, on many cases, half the time. It's primary effect of showing someone bleeding out of, you know, their orifices is very seldom dominant at this time. So there is something peculiar going on that no one seems to want to talk about, that this is not the same strain of Ebola that has haunted the world in a modest way in the Congo and in the past.
Right. I just read an analysis by a scientist who had worked in a gene splicing lab, in a different context, who got, a look at what the current Ebola strain, and he said there's clear evidence of multiple gene splices, within the RNA strands of this Ebola. In other words, it's clearly been operated on and modified at several different places because they can see that, And then there's right now there's the claim that the CIA has a patent that you can look up this patent on Ebola or something, which might be like something that they do for research purposes, they tweak things in labs and then they'll patent their changes for the sake of
It comes to those kind of claims against the CIA, I mean, I despise the CIA. I think the CIA is one of the most immoral, heinous organizations that has ever existed. They do not protect American interests. They make Americans vastly more vulnerable because of their grotesque and immoral behavior around the world. And while it is absolutely true.
If it were the National Institutes of Health or something like that, it would be more plausible.
And so I'm going to be a skeptic on this information.
On
the patent. I'm going to be a skeptic on it. But I can tell you that there have been cases in the past where the CIA has deliberately transmitted diseases and where the CIA has infected Americans with diseases for the explicit purpose of being able to see how they respond to diseases.
Right.
And they've done so also with very dangerous drugs, with unwilling suspects. And so our CIA is absolutely capable of being that revolting. But I'm going to be a skeptic on the information.
Well, if you're a pharmaceutical company and you modify a strain, and that strain is instrumental in the production of a vaccine from which you intend to make gazillions of dollars, you're going to need a patent on that modified strain so that you can get a piece of the action.
I think the Supreme Court of the United States changed the way that RNA and DNA modifications can be patented. Diminishing the rights of the patent holder, such that it would hugely discourage anyone from using genetics to resolve diseases. Because when I remember, it was within the last 2 years that the Supreme Court ruled in this regard, and I said at the time that this will be catastrophic to healthcare over the long haul, because what it is now is a huge disincentive to invest the billions of dollars to create a drug, because you have no means of being able to protect your investment.
Right. But what is very plausible is that somebody has monkeyed with this thing.
Yes.
It's
kind of funny in a way, because the monkeys are a big part of the chain of transmission, and we test the disease with monkeys. But there is every reason to suspect that this strain of Ebola also can be transmitted without fluid-to-fluid contact. For example, the healthcare nurse in Spain was always wearing the full, it's not really a decontamination suit, but the entire suit that would prevent a bodily fluid contact, and yet she got the disease.
Right. Well, did you hear the story about the sheriff's deputy that served the quarantine?
Yeah, but the high likelihood is that he does not have Ebola. I mean, his reason for turning himself in, which I think was the prudent thing to do, was he lived in the same apartment complex where the Libyan moron visited, and he had contact not with the man who contracted and died of Ebola, but with his family members. And so he had reason to think, you know, I could be in trouble. And so he prudently turned himself in.
Are we talking about, because the story, as I've heard on this, is like there was the sheriff's deputy and two, you know, health workers went to the home to have them sign, you know, the quarantine papers. Okay. And then, so you're going to a place that's going to be quarantined, and so what's the first thing you do? Why, of course, you walk right in.
Right. Yeah, it was like, pretty stupid.
Yeah, well, now the papers are signed, it's quarantined.
So, yeah, the first reports that came out on him yesterday had him in the apartment and had him in contact with the family members of the second man, but not there at the same time of the man who died of Ebola.
Right,
and what you've just provided is that on secondary and tertiary reports, they provided the reason that the sheriff deputy was in the apartment. But all that being the case, we're still doing things relative to this disease that make no sense. I even watched a special on ABC News last night about training people to go care for Ebola patients, and it's talking about providing a better level of care. They ought to be quarantined. We ought not be caring for them. We ought to be quarantining them. Politics. Militarism. Often linked. Often more deadly than is any disease. I would tell you that political ambition is the most deadly disease that has ever been unleashed on humankind. I would have said that the deadliest thing to humanity is religion, and I found myself corrected. Now, I would have put socialism as humanism, as the religion of man, and so doing, you'd be accurate attesting the religion of man being responsible for over 100 million deaths in this past century. But it's politics. It's political ambition, the ambition of a president or king to have more territory, more influence, more control, more money, a greater legacy, that drives most murders, of mass murders of lots of people. Well, there is a killing field today that is, there's one, outside of the Islamic world. It's in Ukraine. And the Russians came up with a peace plan. And in the peace plan, the government of Kiev gave Donetsk and Luhansk total independence for a period of 2 years. 2 years, they get to make their own rules. They live independently of the Kiev regime. And the parliament approved it. And so there was a ceasefire. But guess what the Kiev regime was unwilling to do? Remove their troops. So at the airport of Donetsk, at the hub of Donetsk, the Ukrainian army is not only still there, but is still using artillery to bombard Donetsk. 330 people have died since the ratification of the peace plan, because the thugs in the Ukraine won't honor the peace plan. And America wants to call the thugs in Ukraine, the legitimate peacemakers and the legitimate government, and they want to have the Russians be the provocateurs. Well, the Russians came up with a peace plan, and it's those that America is aiding with billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, and military hardware and military intelligence that won't leave the very region that they just granted autonomy to. I'm sickened by this. Not only did another 331 people die since the peace plan that was promoted and aided and abetted by the Russians, but it's ongoing carnage. The reports by the UN now is that there are at least 4,500 residential buildings that have been damaged or destroyed in Donetsk and Luhansk. There are at least 22 communities that still do not have any running water. There's 100 that are still without electricity. And we're coming into winter. There are 5 million people being deprived of their basic rights in the eastern Ukraine. And if they're being deprived of their basic rights to water and electricity and freedom of movement, by whom? It's the Kiev regime that America inspired to act like rioters and take over that government, to depose the popularly elected government, and then America bribed to go after the ethnic Russians in the east to provoke Russia, and then blamed Russia, imposing sanctions on Russia. All the while, thousands of people have died. And what's going to happen now with those who remain without homes, without water, without electricity, and who are continually bombarded by the Kiev regime? Glenn, I know that you're not a fan of what we've done in the Ukraine. I would suspect that this news is ever more troubling. Well, folks, we're going to turn the page, and in the next hour, we're going to continue to talk about Sukkah. This is the celebration of camping out with Iowa, and it is a pleasant change when you consider how just obnoxious human politics and religion are. To turn to Yahweh will be a pleasant change.